Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 175. I'm Rob Wright, Security News Director at TechTarget, and I am here with security news writer Alex Khalafi. Alex, welcome.
Hi, Rob.
How are you
doing? Good to see your face.
I know. We're on video. This is amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And no one will see this video version, probably.
hopefully just our colleagues at TechTarget and no one else until we refine this. So, Alex, we had a lot of news this week around Colonial Pipeline. It was a pipeline palooza for news this week. Mm-hmm. And specifically, we want to talk about a couple of hearings that were held in Congress Tuesday and Wednesday this week. Two hearings, one in the Senate and then one in the House, Tuesday and Wednesday. But before we get into those, we should start off with some pretty big news that broke late Monday. The DOJ announced that the FBI had recaptured, as they put it, most of Colonial Pipeline's $4.4 million ransom payment to dark side threat actors. Mm-hmm. Now, when the news came out that the press conference was happening, I thought to myself, well, this should be something important. They're probably trying to get ahead of something that might come out at tomorrow's hearing or Wednesday's hearing. And sure enough, it was pretty big news. I guess, what was your reaction to that? That seemed like a pretty unexpected turn, maybe, for this Colonial Pipeline story, this ongoing situation.
Good news and a really cool next step in the big fight against ransomware.
Yeah.
That's kind of my immediate take. I thought there was clearly a puffing their chest, sort of PRing it up angle to it. But I still feel the news is slightly worthy of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think?
I mean, good for them for getting some of the money back. And I think the takeaway here is, so the Colonial Pipeline CEO, Joseph Blount, said this in the Senate hearing on Tuesday. He said, you know, we contacted the FBI pretty early on. I think the day they learned of the attack on May 7th, and that consulting with law enforcement and getting them involved early likely led to them being able to recapture, you know, seize most of the ransomware payment that they made. I think it was 2.3 million out of the 4.4 million. So, you know, I think that can probably, that has a positive effect maybe for organizations that maybe don't want to report their ransomware attacks to the authorities. And a lot of them don't. Most of them probably don't, let's be honest. So there may be a positive effect for that for companies out there that are going to make a big, high dollar amount ransom payment and want at least a chance of getting some of it or most of it or all of it back. I think the big question, though, is you know, the feds did not really go into detail about how this took place. All they kind of said was that they used a private key for a Bitcoin address, and that they obtained this key or had this key somehow, and they were able to get most of the funds. I don't understand how they got 2.3 million, but not the full 4.4 million if they had the key and it was just one address. Like, there are a lot of questions about what happens, but overall, I think, to your point, it's a pretty positive development for this, for just the overall ransomware story, the ongoing kerfuffle about all of these attacks. It's a pretty important development, pretty positive development. I don't know how repeatable it is. We'll see. Most of these threat actors do a pretty good job of hiding their Bitcoin. They don't want to get paid in Bitcoin. They want to get paid in Monero. And when they are paid in Bitcoin, they use mixers and all sorts of other methods to sort of essentially launder it and hide it so that, you know, the money can't be seized. So good news, but I don't know how many stories like this we'll see going forward.
Right, right. It's considering it's the first major, or let's say the biggest example of such a thing occurring. It's, we don't know what that means going forward. But what I will say, to sort of transition to speaking about this week as a whole, one of the things I like about doing this podcast is it's like the one place I get to editorialize a little bit about like some less substantiated opinions on some of this stuff.
Sure. We can always edit it out. Go ahead.
Yeah,
fire away.
Yeah. Okay. The PR angle on this, I can't stop thinking about.
Yeah.
Because yes, there has been some genuinely very interesting good things, but yesterday's hearing or Wednesday's hearing, yep, Tuesday's hearing, and the Monday press conference, it feels like a coordinated attempt, not from the people on the committees.
Sure, sure.
Blount, it may be just within Colonial Pipeline, to completely reverse how this looks for them.
Yeah.
And of course they would do that on the one side. But at the same time, I'm just looking at it and I'm like, okay, we were working with law enforcement from the very beginning, and we got most of the money back, and we take complete responsibility, we'll take our lashes for this one.
Sure. Yeah.
But us shutting down the pipeline, we made a good decision. Like, it just, it seems like they're taking hold of the narrative and making it a from a 10 out of 10 bad to like a 5 out of 10 bad.
Yeah,
that's kind of what I think. Beyond transparency, I think that's the goal of what's happening this week.
Yeah, it this, along with Operation Trojan Shield, you know, the big bust with the Anom app. I mean, there's been a number of things lately, I think, on the ransomware front, cybercrime front, just in general, where the FBI, the DOJ, I mean, they're feeling the pressure. They want to show that they're doing something about these threats and what's going on in the cybersecurity realm. And this feels, like there is definitely an image management, sort of a PR spin to it, to accentuate the fact that they are doing something, and look, we are doing something, and this is what we're doing, and we're making progress, and we're not taking this lightly. And I certainly get that. I will say, and we can turn to the hearings now. I watched all of Tuesday's hearing. I watched all of Wednesday's hearing. You watched some of Tuesday's hearing and most of Wednesday's hearing.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say that, yes, there is a bit of also PR and sort of image repair on the part of Colonial and what Joe Blount has been saying in front of Congress and publicly. But I got to say, I think across both hearings, he was as prepared as probably anyone I've seen recently go in front of Congress in a situation like this, and offered direct answers, thoughtful answers, for virtually every question, every issue, every topic. He was poised. He didn't, there weren't many times where he said, well, I don't know, I'd have to get back to you. Like, he seemed to anticipate most of the questions, if not almost all of the questions that he was going to get. And I kept thinking to myself, like, man, you know, maybe the folks at Mandiant and, you know, whatever outside counsel and whoever else he's working with on this breach, maybe put him through like 6 weeks of, I don't know, debate prep or something, or like, you know, congressional hearing prep. Cause it seemed like he was extremely prepared and not only that, not only sort of read from a script and like read rehearsed answers, but gave thoughtful answers to, especially about the subject of the of paying the ransom. So I think he did a good job. Is there image management, PR spin? Sure. But overall, I was, you know, I think I joked at one point in our Slack channel that, like, you know, get ready for the RSA conference 2022 session or keynote where he, you know, gets up on stage and does an hour on lessons learned and just goes into an open sort of dialogue about the experience and what he learned. I mean, that's a common sort of, thing that we see happen these days with executives from breached companies. So I thought he did a good job.
Yeah. Yeah. I think to clarify my point from earlier, I'm not even necessarily criticizing him for doing the image management.
Sure, sure.
Because the information was good. Presumably no one, he's not lying about any of this,
right.
But I don't expect that's the case. And which it wasn't a question, but just sort of doing the journalism thing a little bit.
Yeah. You always got to have some healthy skepticism, you know?
Yeah. But I agree with you. It was apparent what was going on.
Right.
But you're right. That doesn't necessarily take away from the good answers and the relative transparency that we did see.
Yeah.
Some management was there.
Yeah. And I think so overall, I thought his performance was really good. The Senate hearing on Tuesday, it was him alone. And he was, you know, he offered a lot of answers about why they paid the ransom. He was pretty clear that, like, look, this, you know, this Saturday morning, they find out they're attacked. They make the decision to pay later that day. They make the payment the next day. Lo and behold, a couple days later, they learn that they could have restored fully from backup. That the backups were not compromised, the backups were not corrupted. They, you know, they didn't touch the OT systems and the ICS systems that run the actual pipeline. They were able to shut everything down before ransomware spread or touched any of that. So in hindsight, yeah, like they might not have had to pay the ransom, but they did because, you know, I think as he put it, it would have been the difference between the pipeline operations being restored on whatever it was, Wednesday or Thursday after the attack, to maybe the following Wednesday or Thursday. And as we know, there's like a massive gas shortage in some states because people were panic buying fuel based on the news that there was going to be a gas shortage. So there are people like going to their local gas stations and filling up, you know, not just their cars and not just gas cans, but like, I mean, there's images of people filling plastic bags and containers that are not safe for fuel. So I kind of get the pressure that he was under. But I think the thing that really stood out from yesterday's hearing, because we're recording this on a Thursday morning here, June 10th. And Alex, you covered this, that the particulars of how the attackers got in, I thought it was pretty interesting. We knew, I mean, it had been previously reported and disclosed that there was a VPN profile, VPN account, legacy account, or legacy VPN app with an account that was no longer in use that the attackers used to get inside the network. But then we learned a little bit more from Mandiant. So that really stood out to me. What'd you think of that?
Yeah, so the highlight, which is what turned into the story on Search Security, is that VPN profile, which is the earliest known indicator of compromise for the whole thing, one, it was a sort of account that they thought wasn't active anymore,
right, but
was, and two, it was an employee's password. It sounds like it was a relatively complex password, but it was a password that had been used on another website.
Yeah.
At least one, it seems like. So that was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And like the two angles are like, one, how can you do that? Like you interact with the government and
right,
et cetera, which is, I mean, I'm pretty sure the people in the House, or at least one or two of the people there, were absolutely taking that point of view. On the other hand, if you got an Enterprise, there are probably accounts like this.
Yeah.
Everywhere. Like, yeah. not literally, like, tons of them, but I'm saying, sure. Like, the situation he described, it's like, I know of situations, not where attacks have occurred, but, like, I had a job where I left the job, and I was removing myself from the Outlook email, and I was still logged in, even though I wasn't employed there anymore. Like, stuff like this happens, and it doesn't mean it's good. It's something that needs to be improved.
Sure.
But I guess I'm a little sympathetic,
yeah,
to it being that kind of thing.
Yeah, me too. So if it was a case where this was an account that had a weak password, and that password was reused by that employee, and it was an admin account, and you found out that it was like a weak password reused across like the user's Yahoo account, like a bunch of sites that had been breached previously, then I would be like, that's not so great. But a not weak password, a fairly, I think, complex password or long password, from what the gentleman from Mandiant said in the hearing yesterday, I think they determined that it was at least reused once, mm-hmm. that they know of. And it was a third-party website, and that third-party website was breached. Now, I have questions about what was the site or what was the app, and did that site disclose the breach? Did they alert users to the breach? In other words, was it public knowledge? Could Colonial have known about this and done something about it and, you know, alerted the employee? But then you don't even know if the employee is still at at the organization, yeah. which is a key question. And I'm with you. I'm a little sympathetic. I was a little surprised that members of Congress were grilling Blount yesterday, as if like, how could you let this happen? I mean, is it a mistake? Yeah, it's a mistake. They should have decommissioned that account. They should have done something with that account. The employee shouldn't have reused the password, even if it was a complex password. There should have been some type of, you know, maybe credential monitoring, or there should have been some type of awareness if that password was in the wild. But again, we don't know who the employee is, what their role was, what happened there. And compared to other breaches, I don't think it was like gross negligence. I think it just shows that you reuse a password, even a good password, one time, just one time, and something like this can happen. And that sucks. Yeah. Like that is a tough beat for Colonial or any other organization out there that may have something like this happen to them. And so I'm not going to beat them up about that. I think there's lessons learned, but it's not something that I'm going to be apoplectic with rage about. So I was a little, I'm sympathetic a little to Colonial on this one. And I was a little surprised that so many people in the House, on the House committee yesterday, were coming down on them for something that, God, I mean, can you imagine how many federal employees probably reuse passwords and probably have accounts that are still active that shouldn't be? I mean, I don't know.
Think these Congress people haven't done that? Do you think? That's kind of the funny thing here is, yeah. I wonder if they understood what was actually going on in practice, the people who were asking those questions. Yeah. Like they understood the basics to know bad thing happened, but not necessarily with the firsthand insight of, oh, this actually happens quite a bit.
Yep.
Yeah. Well,
that's a good pivot point to our next topic of discussion here. So Congress. I don't listen. What was it? It was the SolarWinds, one of the SolarWinds hearings. There have been many, but one of the ones early on that Alex, you and I watched, you covered, we discussed, I think, on this very podcast, and you said, yeah, that went pretty well. It seemed like these guys knew what they were, you know, were had good questions, and, you know, there wasn't too much grandstanding. There wasn't too much nonsensical sort of diatribes or just, you know, members of Congress going off on a tangent and sort of politicizing stuff. It seemed like it went pretty well. And I agree. I think that one that we discussed a few months back did. Mm-hmm. Wednesday's hearing was not that. Wednesday's hearing felt like it was kind of all over the place. It was done completely remotely via Zoom. There was, and this, look, this is nitpicky, but there were a lot of mute and unmutes, like please mute yourself and please unmute yourself stuff going on. There were technical issues. At one point I joked about how, like, there was interference, and I joked about how, like, we had air traffic control interrupting the Spinal Tap concert. Like, you don't get that reference, Alex, and I understand that, but you should see Spinal Tap at your earliest possible convenience. It is a comedy classic.
Okay.
But, like, there was a few of those technical difficulties. But beyond that, beyond it just being awkward and not being able to, like, get a flow for quick responses and quick questions and quick answers and interruptions, it felt like a lot of these people were not prepared. Blount was prepared again. I mean, he gave essentially the same statement that he did on Tuesday for the Senate hearing, but he did get some different questions, and it seemed like he was ready for them. It seemed like he offered thoughtful answers. He wasn't mm-hmm. dodging. But the questions, like, they kept asking the same questions over and over again about, why didn't you bring in CISA? Why didn't you contact CISA directly? Why did you shun CISA? Why didn't you do this TSA review or audit? Why didn't you do that one? Why did you refuse the TSA? And it was just like, it was maddening. And, like, at one point there was I don't want to call people out specifically here, but there was a member of Congress.
These are elected officials.
There was at one point, I don't know the circumstances of why this was happening, but there was a member of Congress that was zooming into this from their car, or they were, like, riding shotgun somewhere. And I'm just like, what is going on? Like, if you are going to get up in front of a public hearing and discuss about how dire the ransomware situation is and the cybersecurity situation is and how we can't let stuff like Colonial Pipeline happen again, and we have to do something. This is of the utmost importance to the American people. Please make the time to make sure your audio and video are good and that you're not just reading randomly from notes in a very disinterested manner and not riding shotgun on the way to Trader Joe's or wherever you were going. I apologize if it was something important like going to the hospital or taking your dog to the vet. I don't know the circumstances, but it just seemed like there were more than a few people that did not sort of put their full attention and energy into something that they were proclaiming to be extremely important in an extremely sensitive hearing.
Yeah. Phoning it in might be the word.
It was tough. Yeah.
I will give a shout out to Mr. Representative Benny Thompson. Mm-hmm. I thought some of his questions were a little iffy, but I thought for the most part, and I think this is for all, like, the presidents of these sort of committees, I think they have a pretty good track record usually. And I think Benny Thompson did a pretty good job, especially near the front and shepherding this best he could.
Yeah, he did a pretty good job.
But I agree. It was very, very messy. But there was a little bit of interesting information close to the end. Normally, I was commenting, like, maybe yesterday, that, like, I've seen, like, 7 of these hearings, maybe 8 or 9 since the beginning of the year. And my impression is that all of the news is in the opening statements and, like, the first 3 questions.
Yep.
Not always,
but usually you can get most of the goods you need
in the first, like, 30 minutes. Yeah. But there was a surprise couple bits near the end. Yes. Involving Blount.
Yep.
He told Vice President of the committee, Representative Richie Torres of New York, that the ransom payment was made on Colonial's behalf by a third party negotiator, though he didn't give any significant details, even though the sure. question was fairly detailed. And then the other thing was he touched on why the payment was made. He said that, reading from the story, while Colonial did have backups and did ultimately use them, the company paid for the decryption key because of the uncertainty surrounding whether the backups were corrupted, compromised, or safe to use. Like we were touching on earlier, Colonial and Mandiant did determine that the backups were safe, but the payment was made so that they kind of had that backup. And I think I'm also sympathetic to this one. And in fact, I think it was a pretty good explanation.
Yeah.
And one thing I guess I personally value as a person, especially when I see someone in this kind of position talk, I don't even care a ton if it was the right or wrong decision, or I care the normal amount,
right.
But to know what you were thinking when that decision was made, that earns a lot of sympathy points with me.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Yeah. It seemed like he was, I don't want to say like that he apologized for paying the ransom or that he regretted paying the ransom, Blount. But his reasoning as to why they did it and knowing that there was pressure to get those pipeline operations going again and to get fuel. Like I can certainly
see the logic and the pressure.
Yes. I will say though, that going forward, I understand there are deadlines. There are deadlines imposed by the threat actor. There are deadlines to get your services restored in a timely manner so that there's not a gas shortage, although the gas shortage now, it seems like by and large was sort of artificially created because so many people were panic buying. That said, I think going forward, you really have to balance between, if I pay now, I can get things back to normal quicker, even though I have backups. But if you pay, you are giving threat actors millions of dollars. You're emboldening them, and you're financing future operations and future attacks. And I really think, especially when it's a high dollar amount, you have got to be aware of that. And it, I think it's worth, not a CEO, but I think it's worth an extra couple of days to just say, look, let's go through our backups. Let's figure out if they've been compromised or corrupted in any way, if we can restore and get a firm timeline as quickly as possible. And I know from Mandiant, I know they said yesterday that it can take a long time because there's so many systems that are affected in a lot of these cases. But I think it's worth doing that so that you're not just feeding the beast and we're not going through this vicious cycle again and again.
Yes, agreed.
And I jumping back to the CISA stuff, I know that some of this stuff happened toward the end of the hearing, that when we started getting repeat questions, and Alex, you dropped off to finish writing the story. You didn't miss much, let me tell you. I filled you in on some of it, and you went back and watched some of it. At one point, one member of Congress, the whole hacking back thing came up, and you missed a great Walter White reference where a member of Congress said, it's time to strike back. We need to be the one who knocks. That was like, my guy, let's not, you know, I don't think we want the U.S. government going Breaking Bad on this one. I don't know. That's where we want to go. But I did think the CISA and TSA stuff was interesting. I was surprised that so many people in the House were like really hammering Blount on this stuff, because I know what CISA does. I know CISA is very helpful. I think when certain states, certain localities were not working with them on election security, I criticized those states. I criticized those localities and the governors. I think when a government agency is pwned or attacked or whatever, or needs to respond, they should call. But CISA is not like, like, this is no disrespect to CISA, but like Mandiant, this is what they do. Like, this is, they are incident response specialists. They are at the top of the food chain right now for incident response management, engagement, investigations, all that. And I thought Blount was really, he had a great answer at one point when he said, you know, we contracted them, we contracted two other companies.
Dragos was one Dragos, of them, I believe.
And then Black Hills. And he basically said at a certain point, like if we called CISA and had them on site too, in addition to the FBI, then that's, you know, like how many people do you really need doing this stuff?
And then you defer to these people who probably don't know as much, not CISA, but like in the FBI's case, that don't know as much as right. Mandiant does. Even right. CISA might not know as much as Mandiant does.
And I just think that I thought that was a pretty good answer. Look, should they have looped CISA in? Whatever. Like they called the FBI looped CISA in. They understood what was going on. They got an assessment of the situation. I think that's important. But then turning down sort of IR assistance, I don't know. I just don't think that's there's much criticism, valid criticism there. And again, this is no disrespect. CISA is great. I mean,
CISA.
Listen, that's a whole nother podcast. I'm CISA forever. If you're going to say CISO, we're going to say CISA, not CISA. I'm not having this. I'm out. Can't do it. Won't do it. I'm holding the line anyway. But no, I don't know that there was anything really to be gained by bringing them in to do their own assessment or review or how that would have worked with three other parties already on site with law enforcement. And then the TSA thing, like, one of the best points of this whole 2-day affair was when Blount was getting questions about this on the Senate hearing on Tuesday. And he was like, why didn't you take the TSA up on their offer for this, you know, cybersecurity assessment, the cybersecurity review? Why didn't you do it? He said, well, we put it off. We were in the process. We rescheduled it. We rescheduled it a couple of times. We're going to do it in July. But we had to reschedule. We were moving. We were doing different things. It just didn't work out. There was stuff going on with the pandemic. I get all that. But then, you know, he said, look, this is just a questionnaire. Like, this is just like filling out paperwork. This is not something that would have caught a random exposed password for a VPN app that we didn't know was out there. Like, there's no chance any of the stuff that the TSA would have provided would have found that. There's just none. There's no way.
Yeah. And
I think that's like, again, I understand why Congress is asking about this stuff. I want enterprises to embrace the stuff that the government is doing to ensure, especially critical infrastructure, is safe and protected, and they're doing all the right things. But like, let's not go overboard here. I don't think that would have helped in finding this exposed credential and would have prevented this attack. Like, I just think that's ridiculous.
Yeah, and forgive me if I'm mistaken here, but some of these questions seem like they had a misunderstanding of what CISA does.
You think?
Like, it's which I'm not saying they can't do in response if they don't want to, or they haven't.
Yes.
But it's not exactly what they do.
No.
On a regular basis.
They can provide assistance, but they're not sort of like they're not an incident response firm. That's not the agency. They can provide help, they can do some IR, but yeah, I think fundamental misunderstanding is probably putting it lightly. And then just like there were flat out errors. There was, I think it was a representative, Jeff Van Drew at one point said that that Colonial refused these assessments from the TSA. And he was like, I don't know where you got that. We didn't refuse it. We said we would do it, but we had to postpone it. And again, 99.9% sure that assessment was not going to catch something as small and as random as an exposed password through a third-party breached site for an account that you didn't even know was still active. And I just, I think that Congress has just got to be better prepared and pick their battles for things like this instead of, because that's the story today. That was the story last night. Congress grills Blount about the attack. Why did you deny the assistance? Why did you deny the help? Why did you refuse these security audits? Why didn't you do more? What's wrong with you? And I'm just like, let's take a step back and just really look at this in the right light and have all the facts and not go into this half-cocked, which is what that hearing yesterday felt like. It did.
Yeah, and it's that's a running theme on, I'd say, most of the hearings that I see. And I think it's a very specific situation where you have these people, whether they're on Congress or the Senate, who clearly don't understand this stuff to a professional level, at least for the majority, if not just about virtually all of them, right? But because they're elected officials, they're not allowed to say, or they feel like they're not allowed to say, you know, I don't actually understand this that much, or ask questions based on what they do understand. So you have this, like, this thing that comes across as, or may in fact be, arrogance in how they ask these questions that are heated but aren't based on complete information.
Yes.
Which, frankly, shows disrespect to the witnesses.
I mean, there were, I got to say, there were a couple, and I honestly don't remember all the names. It's two different hearings, Senate and House. But there were occasionally a couple of people who said, you know, I need you to clarify this because I didn't understand it, you know, or, you know, can you, like, especially with Carmichael from Mandiant, like, can you walk us through what that means and why X happened or what happened with Z or Y or whatever? And kudos to them.
Yes.
But by and large, it felt like it was, you know, okay, you know, the chairman recognizes X member from X state, and they immediately launch into a script about, like how many times do I need to hear about what the pipeline shutdown did? I know how many gallons of fuel. I know what happened. I don't need this to be recited every time and to have people say, well, this is why we need to be stronger on Russia, or this is why we need to you know, be fuel independent, or this is why we need to be drilling more. And, like, I don't care. Like, just ask questions for the people that are in front of you who are not geopolitical experts. Ask them about the security, ask them about the enterprise infrastructure and the situation, and move on. Like, just be prepared. My God, it's not hard.
Yeah. Yeah, so there was some earnest discussion for sure. But I agree. It was like a lot of ignorant chest beating and ignorant rubbing face in the dirt.
Just, I, by the end of the day yesterday, I felt for Blount. I was just like, man, this guy had to repeat a lot of answers just in the hearing on Wednesday for the House, like, not even repeat answers from the day before. He's getting the same questions over and over again. And I felt for him because, like, you know, you got to put on a happy face. You can't call out members of Congress in a situation like this. You just can't do it. And, you know, he leaves that, I guess, for us. We're doing it now on the podcast. But by and large, I thought the Senate hearing on Tuesday was really well done. And I don't think it's just a matter of, like, that hearing was largely in person in DC with members present in the chamber. Blount was there. And then Wednesday's hearing was done totally remotely. I don't think you could just sort of chalk up the differences in quality of the two hearings between one being largely in person and one being remote. I think certain members were prepared and certain members weren't. Certain members came in with an axe to grind and weren't paying attention to the questions that they had that were already asked and answered. Certain people wanted to grandstand. Certain people wanted to misinterpret things or were prone to misinterpreting things. And it did not go well. did mm-hmm. not go well. So there's your taste, Alex, of what happens when a hearing, when a congressional hearing goes wrong. I hope you enjoyed it.
I had a lot of fun, Rob.
I hope Thanks you enjoyed
sharing
all the,
that with me.
Yeah, all the pithy jokes and Spinal Tap references that you may not get over Slack as this was unfolding. It was a good time.
Yeah.
I guess any closing thoughts? Do you think this is? Do you think we've got more hearings on Colonial coming?
I think we're probably at the point in the solar wind cycle where maybe later this month, maybe next month, maybe the month after, we'll get like either a hearing or something really interesting coming out, or I don't know, Black Hat or something. We'll have a surprise, something. But I think we're getting to that stage in the cycle where it's gonna start to slow down soon.
Yeah.
I think this was kind of the big burst, and yeah, I think it's gonna trail off for a while after this.
Probably.
What do you think?
Yeah, I think that the big shoe to drop now is, I mean, we know they paid, we know that they contacted the insurance company, and the insurance company covered most or all of it, I think, according to the hearing yesterday. They worked with their third-party negotiator that paid, they checked, like, I think all the boxes, like, you know, did you pay the ransom to a sanctioned entity? No, we checked, or we went through all that, and the third party that we used made sure. I think all of those boxes have been checked at this point. The one on the law enforcement side is how did they get this payment back? And what is wrong with DarkSide? What's going on with DarkSide? How did this happen? How did they, you know, let this, $2.3 million bounty just sort of escape them? I think those are the big questions. But as far as for Colonial and Blount, like maybe some insight down the road, maybe an RSA keynote, like I said, where they say, here's lessons learned. And yes, we didn't know that our operations were going to be restored in a timely manner without the decryptor, but you know, here's an inside look at sort of the process and how it went and all that. So probably right. Yeah. But you know, Alex, we're probably going to have another attack and another series of hearings and some more frustrations in watching those hearings. Sorry to say for you. I'm sure you'll enjoy them greatly.
Well, let me just say, there has never been a better time to be a cybersecurity reporter.
Truly, truly. Well, Alex, thank you for joining me on this episode of the Risk and Repeat podcast to discuss those glorious hearings and the Colonial Pipeline story. I appreciate it, as always.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
And thank you to the readers and listeners of Search Security. I'm Rob Wright, and we will see you next time.